Chapter 18. Annabeth Does Obedience School. We stood in the shadows of Valencia Boulevard, looking up at gold letters etched in black marble, DOA Recording Studios. Underneath, stenciled on the glass doors, no solicitors, no loitering, no living. It was almost midnight, but the lobby was brightly lit and full of people. Behind the security desk sat a tough-looking guard with sunglasses and an earpiece. I turned to my friends.
"Okay, you remember the plan."
"The plan," Grover gulped.
"Yeah, I love the plan,"
Annabeth said.
"What happens if the plan doesn't work?"
"Don't think negative."
"Right," she said. "We're entering the land of the dead, and I shouldn't think negative?"
I took the pearls out of my pocket, the three milky spheres the Nereid had given me in Santa Monica. They didn't seem like much of a backup in case something went wrong. Annabeth put her hand on my shoulder.
"I'm sorry, Percy. You're right. We'll make it. It'll be fine."
She gave Grover a nudge.
"Oh, right," he chimed in. "We got this far. We'll find the master bolt and save your mom. No problem."
I looked at them both and felt really grateful. Only a few minutes before I'd almost gotten them stretched to death on deluxe waterbeds, and now they were trying to be brave for my sake, trying to make me feel better. I slipped the pearls back in my pocket.
"Let's whoop some underworld butt."
We walked inside the DOA lobby. Muzak played softly on hidden speakers. The carpet and walls were steel gray. Pencil cactuses grew in the corners like skeleton hands. The furniture was black leather, and every seat was taken. There were people sitting on couches, people standing up, people staring out the windows or waiting for the elevator. Nobody moved or talked or did much of anything. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see them all just fine. But if I focused on any one of them in particular, they started looking transparent. I could see right through their bodies. The security guard's desk was a raised podium, so we had to look up at him. He was tall and elegant, with chocolate-colored skin and bleach-blonde hair shaved military style. He wore tortoiseshell shades and a silk Italian suit that matched his hair. A black rose was pinned to his lapel under a silver name tag. I read the name tag, then looked at him in bewilderment.
"Your name is Chiron?"
He leaned across the desk. I couldn't see anything in his glasses except my own reflection, but his smile was sweet and cold, like a python's, right before it eats you.
"What a precious young lad."
He had a strange accent, British maybe, but also as if he had learned English as a second language.
"Tell me, mate, do I look like a centaur?"
"No."
"Sir,"
he added smoothly.
"Sir,"
I said. He pinched the name tag and ran his finger under the letters.
"Can you read this, mate? It says Charon.
Say it with me.
Charon."
"Charon."
"Amazing. Now, Mr. Charon."
"Mr. Charon," I said.
"Well done."
He sat back.
"I hate being confused with that old horse, man. And now, how may I help you, little dead ones?"
His question caught in my stomach like a fastball. I looked at Annabeth for support.
"We want to go to the underworld," she said.
Charon's mouth twitched.
"Well, that's refreshing."
"It is?" she asked.
"Straightforward and honest. No screaming. No, there must be a mistake, Mr. Charon."
He looked us over.
"How did you die, then?"
I nudged Grover.
"Oh,"
he said.
Drowned in the bathtub?"
"All three of you?"
Charon asked. We nodded.
"Big bathtub."
Charon looked mildly impressed.
"I don't suppose you have coins for passage. Normally with adults, you see. I could charge your American Express or add the ferry price to your last cable bill. But with children, alas, You never die prepared. Suppose you'll have to take a seat for a few centuries.
Oh, but we have coins. I set 3 golden drachmas on the counter, part of the stash I'd found in Krusty's office desk.
Well, now, Karen moistened his lips. Real drachmas. Real golden drachmas. I haven't seen these in...
His fingers hovered greedily over the coins. We were so close.
Then Karen looked at me. That cold stare behind his glasses seemed to bore a hole through my chest.
Here now, he said. You couldn't read my name correctly. Are you dyslexic, lad?
No, I said. I'm dead.
Karen leaned forward and took a sniff.
You're not dead. I should have known. You're a godling.
We have to get to the underworld, I insisted.
Karen made a growling sound deep in his throat. Immediately, all the people in the waiting room got up and started pacing, agitated, lighting cigarettes, running hands through their hair, or checking their wristwatches.
Leave while you can, Karen told us. I'll just take these and forget I saw you.
He started to go for the coins, but I snatched them back.
No service, no tip.
I tried to sound braver than I felt.
Karen growled again, a deep, blood-chilling sound. The spirits of the dead started pounding on the elevator doors.
It's a shame, too, I sighed. We had more to offer.
I held up the entire bag from Krusty's stash. I took out a fistful of drachmas and let the coins spill through my fingers.
Karen's growl changed into something more like a lion's purr.
Do you think I could be bought, godling? Just out of curiosity, how much have you got there?
A lot, I said. I bet Hades doesn't pay you well enough for such hard work.
Oh, you don't know the half of it. How would you like to babysit these spirits all day? Always, please don't let me be dead, or please let me across for free. I haven't had a pay raise in 3,000 years. Do you imagine suits like this come cheap?
You deserve better, I agreed. A little appreciation, respect, good pay.
With each word, I stacked another gold coin on the counter. Karen glanced down at his silk Italian jacket, as if imagining himself in something even better.
I must say, lad, you're making some sense now, just a little.
I stacked another few coins.
I could mention a pay raise while I'm talking to Hades.
He sighed. The boat's almost full anyway. I might as well add you 3 and be off.
He stood up, scooped our money, and said, Come along.